This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3814 for Thursday, the 16th of March, 2023. Today's show is entitled 2022-2023 New Year's Show Episode 3. It is part of the series HPR New Year Show. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 121 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is 2022-2023 New Year's Show, where people come together and chat.
Didn't you just go make coffee?
No, I took the 10-minute AFM AFK to go have water drip.
Dang it, George, you gotta make everything creepy.
I know. I felt like I was starting to smell, because I did walk 15 minutes.
Question, were you jogging near a... were you out jogging?
I was not out jogging. I try to jog, but my legs all met. Try to walk is at least 10,000.
Oh, I used to. Another thing that drove my boss nuts. Early in my career as a security guard, we had these big Detex clocks. You had to go stick a key in them and turn the key, and it would make a mark on a paper disc. The paper disc would be turned by the clock. Well, early in my career, when I was much younger and far more foolish, I said, wait a minute, the best security for this operation is not to go from in any regular pattern, but is to bounce around and do basically a drunkard's walk all over the property. Now, this is theoretically true. However, the client and my boss were used to reading the pattern of a fairly regular or a subset of, you know, going building A, B, and C up, and you go to the top and you go floor by floor and you, whatever. A very sequential standard route. Actually doing it random was a little out of their wheelhouse. So I ended up just going, you know, we had a half dozen patterns and they became recognizable, and everybody was happy, even if they didn't provide too much security. Oh, I have about a gallon and a half of milk and a ton of chocolate powder if I get desperate before it's time to hit the cafe. Lactose intolerant?
I guess I might have developed them, but I married a tree-hugging hippie. I became a vegetarian, but also over time, I've almost become vegan. I just prefer oat milk. But if I have too much dairy, I believe...
Well, I can understand that. Unfortunately, the only vegetarian that I had much to do with was my former shrink, who triggered my PTSD as a test of my logic. Also, she got her PhD without getting a master. That's a warning sign, folks.
Good flag.
No, more like an entire Kremlin, thank you. She was a liberal, and she had a PhD. I did not graduate college, and I was conservative. I was also the patient, and since she knew everything there was to know about my particular situation, including how I should air condition a house that's impossible to air condition and pay for, I should rewire a house on Social Security, yeah, and many other miraculous things, anything that I said came out as a distortion or otherwise incorrect, basically heresy, because she was a liberal and I was someone that should be managed by a liberal. Also, my first problems with dehydration were going to those sessions. And one time in Park Street, I collapsed because I was dehydrated, and the EMTs came and I spent overnight in the hospital. Thank goodness I was carrying water because the hospital would not allow me to take anything by mouth so that I could get hydrated again. So I actually had to hydrate myself with my own water much of the time because they couldn't get approval for me to take anything. But my shrink did not find the fact that I had weak vital signs to be life-threatening. I believe the EMTs were of a different opinion, which is why I ended up in university hospital. The second, I would, in order to endure her treatment, I was suppressing myself to a high degree. And the second time I collapsed trying to get to her lair, I sort of decided maybe this treatment ain't good for me. An interesting parallel was that I got PTSD across the dinner table talking to my father, who's a graduate of a high school in West Virginia around the end of World War II. Now, the interesting thing is that the graduate from the high school and the graduate from the PhD program both believed that they knew everything there was to know. And if I just listened to them, everything would go wonderfully, especially if I didn't talk back. So I was being treated by a rigid psychologist for being raised by a rigid gentleman. Also, when one Monday morning I entered her office, this is what triggered my PTSD, entered her office, and she wanted me to justify the Orlando attack on a gay club, since I was known to believe that the Second Amendment was a reasonable thing. And I gave her several reasons that a legal ownership of firearms was perfectly okay if they were used properly. But under her interrogation, I ended up getting rather emotional, which she found quite interesting, but she did not believe in giving quarter. Now, so I sat down and my PTSD took over, which trained by my father, I have under PTSD conditions, I can have a very sharp tongue, and that's all that happened, but it was not fun, because the surviving veteran is a very toxic part of my personality.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was...
Well, I had anxiety attacks earlier in my... Before I was doing security and stuff, I had anxiety and stuff. I was raised by a nasty alcoholic family. But my dad, who was raised by someone who believed in physical discipline, razor strap style, he was more sophisticated. He would melt you down emotionally with chop logic, and then he could say, I never laid a hand on you, which was true, but not necessarily very relevant when you were, you know, when you were about to gnaw your arm off to get away. And of course, I've been a little gun shy of shrinks ever since. And when I was about to start looking again for further treatment, our friend COVID showed up.
Yeah, slow response. Helping a friend in Telegram, he's sending me pictures of his Android TV not connecting. I don't know, probably.
Understandable.
And like texts for everyone who would support Oxygen.
Know your staff for the cat.
That's pretty much
it. If you look through YouTube, you'll find that many projects, whether they're farming, hot rodding, whatever, a lot of them include significant feline supervision.
I think I'm certainly good for now. She's gone up to her room, which used to be the guest room.
Yeah, that reminds me. We had a cat here, little gray, short hair. And my mother had a West Highland White Spitz Cross, 50 pounds. And the cat, maybe 8 or 10, soaking wet. And when I would take that dog for a walk, the cat would walk along with it most of the time. Sometimes she would pick a spot, let us walk up by, and would wait until we were coming back to the house. But it was fun to walk the cat and the dog together. The dog was on a leash, the cat wasn't. But when the cat got in the house, if she wanted to sleep under my mother's bed, the dog moved. If she wanted to sleep in the dog's bed, the dog moved. The cat...
My dogs are the same way.
The cat had our dog pussy whip.
That's like literally.
He had claws and was perfectly willing to use them if necessary.
That's fairly standard cat-dog behavior when the dog's not allowed to eat that cat.
I'm reading up on my friend's problem, and apparently AT&T and Amazon would end behind that.
I've not heard anything good about AT&T, to be perfectly honest with you.
I think if I had it, and that may be, I would probably be forced to just, and you know me, I like to use a VPN, sure they're routers.
Meanwhile, I've been, probably hear me typing furiously away. I have a TIN set up on this old laptop for reading news groups. I just subscribed to that news group, the sort of therapy for ex-sysadmins. And I was like, oh, you know, I for some reason I can't reply, I can't follow up to these posts. So I was like, well, you know, I probably should set this up in Neomut and just have it in my mail browser. This is an example again of where the documentation is just rubbish. the documentation on both sides, on my Usenet provider and on Neomut side. It's like, here are the things you can fill out. And it's like, okay, can I have an example, please, of how I might set this up? You know, this is ridiculous.
Well, they did say that group is moderated, so that may be bugged.
No, what's happening, because I can't reply to any groups, and on Emacs I can. So GNUs has some additional magic that it's doing that makes this work properly. I'm trying to do it in TIN and then Neomut, so... Essentially, what's happening is I can read my news groups read only. I just can't post to them, which means somewhere along the line the authentication is failing. But I don't really understand why, because in my news or file, everything is correct according to the documentation provided by my Usenet provider. So this is just a case of one of these programs is lying, because this works with GNUs. It just doesn't work with TIN or Neomut. And I need to understand where in their sort of authentication procedure have I not filled in the correct thing, basically. It's very annoying. But there we go. This is what you get for trying to use, you know, ancient technology on more modern machines. They're just not set up for it.
The workaround.
Oh, hey, come put in that fix for me.
Heck no. Heck no, Joe.
Oh, it's not Joe, is it?
He's Joe. I saw him, right. I just had to go, heck no, Joe, because I'm...
Sorry, we've got Joes in our group. And like, no.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we should pimp out. We're with Tech and Coffee.
Oh, cool.
The old Google Plus group that used to be big, now we're just only a couple dozen of us still.
Tech and Coffee.
Yep.
Do you remember us? Some people do.
People don't.
No, okay.
We're not this famous, George. This isn't the Google Plus days.
Well, no, but we've had people join us since, like, I think I remember this in Google Plus. Yes, we were semi.
Second Coffee Google?
Google Plus, back in Google Plus days, we had one of the biggest. It's dead now, so are we. Wait, what?
Back in the dawn of time when telegraphs and telegrams were still common, I belonged to a alternate lifestyle group that would be shaded gray today. And Yahoo had a lot of groups of people of similar interests, and they decided to shut down their chat groups, and a lot of the people from Yahoo joined the bulletin board I was on. It was fairly universally hoped that these Yahoos would return to Yahoo.
Yeah, to peas and stuff, and we've done this. Actually, we've done this in Google Plus days. We had an IRC room. We have Discord that links back to our Telegram. So who don't want to join Telegram can go to our. And then we have Telegram, the heart of. Then
now Telegram bridge for Discord.
Yep.
Yeah, we're using. What's it called? I know. So I can find it. I think it just stored in TacBridge. I can run my Docker file here. Teddycross, it's called. But the plan is next year, or this upcoming year, I will basically sit down and we're going to use a matrix room as a conduit room, because unfortunately, Telegram does a very silly thing, or a very sensible thing, depending on how you look at it, where basically when you bridge into Telegram, it's a bot. And the problem with that is you can't bridge multiple things in because bots can't talk to other bots. So if somebody messaged in from Discord and the Discord bot posted the message in Telegram, if we bridge Telegram to IRC, the people on IRC would not get that message because the bot would not talk to the other bots. They would ignore each other's messages. So instead, we're going to set up, we've got a Matrix room, and we will basically have everything feed into there because Matrix handles integrations much more sensibly and creates users for them as opposed to bots. So you can have multiple things, IRC, Discord, Telegram, etc., all funneling into Matrix, and it will actually feed back to every single connected service, just so that we can have one place for everyone to come in, because I'm more of an IRC user. I find Telegram annoying. I like to not be notified of messages. I like to just have it sat there idling.
I turn everything off. I turn off all notifications. That's the first thing I do with every group, including our own. And you know, I say, I love them all, but I'm sorry, I need to sleep.
It gets to be too much. No, I understand. Because I have a Telegram and a Discord, everything else, and yeah, they're the reason that my phone automatically goes on silent at 10, and yeah, I don't get pings from Telegram at all anymore. So tired of it.
I put our URL in there if anybody wants to check it out or join or whatever. People are usually friendly in there. We do have two maintained public rooms. Well, one semi-public. And we have Rosebot, so you have about 5 minutes, so we might have some. But we also have another one called Thunderdome. And so the main room, we don't allow politics and religion to be talked to. So, you know, just basic tech stuff. And then the other one, it's Thunderdome. You can talk about anything you want, and you can post anything you want. And if you don't like it, you just leave.
At least you have one of my podcasts listed there on the podcast page.
Oh, do we? HBR?
No, Mintcast.
Oh, Mintcast. Yeah, no, Moss is one of our key members in Tech and Culture.
Oh, cool.
That's why it's there. Because, you know, if anybody has if anybody in our group has a podcast, doesn't matter, even if they just interact in it slightly, we just throw it on there in the friends.
Awesome.
So because, you know, I interact with a lot of HPR people, I just threw you guys.
Yeah, you got Distro Hopper's Digest, Full Circle Magazine, all Moss's stuff.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah. Moss, he likes to be
cool.
Yeah, we have a couple of the Linux lads that hang out in Tech and Coffee. We're more of a generic tech thing, so we don't, like, you know, I mean, I'm pretty much a Linux evangelist, but I don't, you know, force, you know, we talk anything. You want to talk Windows, whatever, coffee.
Should we go on to Sam's Club here in a minute?
Can you pick me up some seltzer? I'm almost out. I'm just kidding.
I have no idea. I've never been there before. Sam's Club is awesome.
Oh, it's awesome. It's just Walmart, but with big boxy type feel to it.
Well, there are some things that it's just plain better to buy in bulk. But I was going over their inventory online, and yeah, there's definitely some things that are missing. Can't believe the freaking price of eggs right now.
Oh yeah, everything's... Luckily, the stuff I normally eat has pretty much stayed the same or gone down, where it used to be the more expensive. I'm okay. The rest of y'all.
Well, surprisingly, while egg cartons have like doubled or tripled in price... the cartons of egg whites is stayed roughly the same.
I'm trying to think of the one liquid fake vegan egg. It's pretty good, actually. I can't think of the name of it.
I can picture the bottle in my head. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, the yellow bottle one. That stuff is awesome. To me, it tastes just like eggs. But if I ate real eggs, you'd kill me.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. And I think it's stayed roughly the same price.
Yeah, it's always been about $4 on Target.
Well, yeah, and it's about half the size of the egg whites bottle. And it kind of looks like a decent-sized bottle of mustard.
Yeah, they have the folded-over ones in the frozen section, so you can, like, put in sandwiches, or it look like it goes into an Egg McMuffin. I'm sorry, I think I got us off technology altogether.
Oh, no. It's still a good topic. I mean, the show goes on for a really long time, so, you know, you got to kind of spread things out. No, I was going to branch from there and be like, well, because I tend to do a lot of low-fat items, I tend to try out at least some of the vegan stuff.
So I'm going to ask right now, is one of you either G-Love or...
Is one of you what?
Well, two people just follow Tech and Coffee, and if it's one... also, we have Hacker G and G-Love, and Tored Up Fedora Red Hat followed Tech and Coffee just within the last 5 minutes, and if it's any one of yous, I'll follow you back.
I followed a minute ago, but that should be Joe.
Hold on. I have Tored Up at putugspot.lol and glove at same place and hackerg at hackerzone.com.
Early I did it under my name. I mean, here, I'll join as the Mint cast.
Well, I think the problem is, too, is between servers, it takes some time. Some people tell me they join, and I see it like 10 minutes late.
I could join as Tech and Route or as TechNauts if you want. Admin on a lot of crap on Facebook.
Oh, is this Facebook you're talking about? Yeah, we do have a Facebook entity, too, I think.
Yeah.
Nobody really.
Try to join you can.
I'm talking Mastodon.
Oh, set up on Mastodon.
The Facebook one or two of us admin for a while, but you know they have lives. And, We do have a shared password vault that Kieran actually set up, and some admins have access to that stuff. So if they felt they wanted to do the, I mean, I might jump in every once in a while, but yeah, I don't know how the Facebook login.
Yeah, I should probably be doing more with Mintcast's Facebook page. I've kind of faded away from Facebook in the last couple of years because, well, it's Facebook.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I just gave up on it because I felt like, well, I was doing it quite a bit until Google Plus came out, and then, I don't know, my family's all on there, so I would jump in everyone, but I don't know, it became noise. I'm sure Mastodon will do the same to me.
Supposed to be setting up a new admin in the Facebook page anyway, so they've changed everything.
We had a real problem with Facebook, actually, because we have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. And because of how we set it all up originally, the page is owned by the group. And basically, this is something that Facebook has since changed and don't do anymore and stuff like that. And basically, it means that we can't access certain administrative features because they just never thought about how to migrate old pages away from this structure. And you're just like, they clearly don't care about, like, historical pages and stuff. Yeah, they're awful. Awful.
And we have been pimping out. Every chance I get, I pimp out HPR. And on the Mastodon, I'll pimp you up. Now I just need you guys to wear a tube top and pleather me.
Always with the leather miniskirts.
Pleather, not leather.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course, vegan.
Seeing if anyone's awake at them.
Yes, but why are you vegan?
Oh, I married a hippie, kind of. She was really into, she was a vegetarian from teens up. She was brought up in California. She passed away 7 years ago, so I probably could have stopped doing it, but I kept doing it. I'm that way, and I'm also kind of hippie-ish nowadays. So.
Yeah, I was a vegan for 2 years, and I was a vegetarian for about 4 or 5 years. And it is a, you know, sorry?
Why?
Several reasons. One, I had a vegetarian girlfriend at the time, and it was cheaper to cook one set of meals. Vegetarianism is generally cheaper, you know?
Yeah, it is.
The reason I stopped was just because I like to travel a lot, and a lot of the best food that, like, you know, is culturally important that you want to try when you travel somewhere often contains meat. And, you know, I don't eat much meat in my day-to-day life. I do at the moment because I'm at my parents and they don't, you know, they have a lot of meat in their diet and whatever. But generally speaking, I like to be able to go somewhere and try the sort of, you know, what is considered a staple dish. So it makes sense. I still avoid beef mostly because just beef's environmental impact is devastating. But other meats, I'm not really that bothered, like chicken and stuff like that. It is what it is.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah, no. I think in both of our cases, it's women.
Yeah, both of ours.
The women in our lives.
I mean, geez. I mean, I hate to do this, you know, but my wife used to love to cook, but cook. I went to school near the CIA, Culinary Institute of America, central agency, but I went to school at Marist College. And, you know, most of my friends knew how to cook and do things. And so rooming and living with some of them, you kind of knew how to do, like, you know, I knew how to properly use knives, all this stuff, even though I didn't go to school there. So I learned to cook pretty well. I mean, I wouldn't say chef-like, but I mean, at least I knew what I was doing. And when she would cook, it was okay, but I was like, let me do that. So when I had to cook, I'm not going to cook two meals, like Kieran said. I'm going to cook one meal for both of us. It's much easier instead of making one for me and one not. When we were dating, though, I wasn't vegan or vegetarian. But around the time we got married, I just made it easier because I did, I'm going to say 90% of the cooking. I made her lunches. I made me lunches. I worked from home for years. So I'd make pack her a lunch and make her a coffee and send her on her way. And I'm not going to go buy two supermarket. Like almost anything that she could pull out of the fridge, she could eat. So that's kind of like, yeah, for women. We did it for women.
I was going to say, well, I was in exactly the same position. My ex-girlfriend, when we moved in together, it was like, she didn't really know how to cook or do anything like that. And I had some basic knowledge. So it was kind of like, well, I'm lazy. I'm not cooking twice. so we're going to have just vegetarian meals. And that's just going to be what we do.
I kind of went the other way with that. I have some specific dietary requirements for myself. And kids have basically, well, most of them have the exact opposite dietary requirements because they're underweight and I'm trying not to be overweight. But like my son, we keep feeding him and feeding him and feeding him, and he keeps staying under like 10% body fat, which isn't healthy when you're 12. So I cook my meals my way, and at the same time I'm cooking my meals, I'm cooking their meals their way. Yeah. I do cook everything twice, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I did that a little bit. So much it one way, that way. Nobody argued.
Well, nobody argues with me anyway.
I do think there's a difference between having like specific dietary requirements for, you know, health reasons and a dietary choice like, you know, vegetarianism, whatever. Like, you know, if you have allergies and stuff like that, it's like extremely important that you make sure everything is separated out and don't do everything. Whereas like it would be perfectly feasible to make two meals, one with meat and one without, especially if you carefully plan, you know, what meals you're making and make something where the meat can be added or something alternative can be added. And that's how you kind of, like with curries and stuff, are particularly good for that kind of thing. But yeah, if you've got sort of dietary requirements, it gets a bit more complicated and quite often you end up having to separate things.
Yeah, that's true too. With the whole, I would probably be vegan now, and most of my household, as far as the stuff I buy. But the only reason I'm vegetarian, it's very similar to why I eat meat again, is because if I go out with friends, I mean, it's like, I'm in the South. 90% of the stuff I can eat in most restaurants is vegetarian. There's very rarely a vegan option. So I can at least do vegetarian in most cases. Yeah, because if it's got cheese or, I don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, I can understand why it would be a little bit hard to verify that everything was vegan.
Yeah, and the one that gets me is that there are different interpretations of veganism. So there are some vegans who won't eat, for example, honey, because they consider that to be, you know, an animal product and a product of animal suffering and whatever. And I was always one of those people. I never had a problem with honey. Like, even when I was vegan, I was like, I don't really see how a natural byproduct of bees, which they would produce no matter what, is going to be a problem. You know, I don't really understand that. I see much more argument, in fact, for not eating things like avocado, especially in Europe, where it doesn't grow naturally in most of Europe and Northern Europe in particular, and you've got to ship it all sorts of places, and, you know, yeah, then you've got loads of bees having to keep them pollinated, well, and it's ridiculous.
If either one of you had said that it was the ethics about veganism, it had been an entirely different conversation, and it never ceases to amaze me how the ethical vegans tend not to think about, you know, the consequences of the actions that they want.
The only way to be ethically vegan is to only eat produce from your local area. If you're really concerned specifically about environmentalism.
Environmentalism. But, you know, the whole issue is that, you know, you're talking about when it comes to environmentalism, you have all these livestock that are an issue. Now, a lot of vegans, their whole thing is, oh, we shouldn't be killing animals. But then you don't want there to be a market for all this livestock that's already there. So what, you want all the farmers to kill all their livestock? Yeah, they're not going to continue to pay for them if the livestock's not going to make them money.
The fact of the matter is, like, the way that the entire system is set up is to, you know, to cater to an omnivorous diet, you know, and that's right. That's fine. I believe that you can, and I believe that possibly we should be reducing the amount of meat we eat. But more importantly, because I come at it at like more of an environmental perspective, we should be reducing the amount of
methane
imported food.
Oh yeah.
It's like, you know, like I say, I mean, I live in Northern Europe. I live in Germany. We don't grow avocados in Germany. They're not from here. They're and we import so much stuff. And the one that gets me is when you get like a box of pre-cut carrots. It's a plastic box. And the carrots were grown in France, which is fine. You know, we have no border with France. We're very close. It comes over on a train. Lovely. But it was packaged in Singapore.
So it goes from France to Singapore to Germany.
From France to Singapore and then back to Germany. I'm like, we're only 2,000 kilometers down the road. You could have just chucked it to us. Yeah, I'll give you a plastic box if you like.
there are some interesting studies there about the amount of methane that cows produce. Mm-hmm. And the best ways to actually reduce that isn't to just, you know, kill off all the cows. It's to change what they're eating from feeder corn, which is actually extremely bad for the land, but government subsidizes it, which is why most farmers tend to either grow feeder corn or soy. If you switch it away from feeder corn and move it to something like seaweed, then just that change in diet would greatly reduce the amount of overall emissions from farming.
Yeah. My whole perspective on all this kind of thing is there are people out there who know much more about this stuff than me. And I will leave them to it, because I don't know.
I was at one time an Iowa farm boy. Granted, at one time I also, you know, lived in Germany. Mm-hmm. Started kindergarten there, early 80s, well, mid-80s.
Went to Kita. And whereabouts were you in Germany?
Herzogenaurach.
Okay, yeah.
But I wasn't there for long. I was only there for 3 years.
Right.
Yeah, my brother seems to have liked his time in Germany.
It is a very nice place in general. I moved there specifically because the UK's tech industry kind of fell apart after we left the European Union. So I was like, well, bye.
Well, he had a couple of bits of excitement. One, he was driver or co-driver on a 5-ton wrecker. And for some reason, it couldn't stay on the road, and it decided to go lumbering off of it. I don't know what it takes to total a 5-ton military wrecker, but I suspect it's substantial.
Yes. Can't imagine it's something that happens too frequently. Otherwise, I'm sure we'd hear about it.
You'd be surprised.
And toward the end of his tour, his exit from Germany was accelerated by being put on guard duty when some East Germans decided to try their luck at coming over the wire, bearing high explosives and submachine guns. And my brother, a peaceful, mild-mannered mechanic, was one of a couple of guys to raise the alarm and shoot at these unwanted guests. So once something like that happens, my brother's exit from Germany was expedited, and the captured foreign personnel were handed over to the German authority. I don't know where they were, but as he was signing off, my brother allegedly heard that these gentlemen got lost on their way to jail. The German authorities having a limited sense of humor when somebody tries to disturb a person, so these people just faded off into the night. Without further bothering the German authority, except for perhaps picking up their brass and reloading their weapons. Yeah, it was part of the Cold War that wasn't quite as cold as most people thought. I suspect there was a lot of stuff that didn't make the papers.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And there are also things that would have made the papers in Germany, or East Germany, that wouldn't have made the papers elsewhere, you know. It's all dependent on what's convenient and proper to show your particular audience, and the rest of it needs to stay hidden.
One of the things that I found from YouTube was a peculiar provisioning problem that the Allies took advantage of. The Russians evidently did not provide toilet paper for their troops, so the Russians tended to use communications forms for toilet paper. Now, since this communication forms were usually interesting communications if you're an Allied intelligence person type, some poor, unarmed, unwanted, unloved British persons had to go through Russian trash and pick up their used twice used communication forms, despite of them having an odor not of roses applied. Also, I understand that after reunification, some of these gentlemen went back to the village in the eastern part of Germany and had a nice chat with some of the civilians who helped them on their way when they were trying not to disturb the East German authority or the Russian authorities. But the Germans welcomed them quite warmly after reunification, just as they had back in the bad old days when these people were much younger and things were much more dangerous. It was an interesting little bit of history. It also said, provide toilet paper for your troops and burn your damn used sensitive document.
The evilness in me, I've sent him back this stuff. This is the AT&T. I just said, here's AT&T's number. Have them look at it. Besides, yep. It's rainy out. I don't want to go.
Somewhere I was reading about somebody doing tech support, got a phone call, and there was this emergency where someone was waving a knife around in the server room. I don't know, mental breakdown, whatever. And the guy on the telephone said, well, this will just take a minute. Well, sorry, I can't help you. Somebody's acting up in the server room. Well, this will just take a minute. No, not quite.
I'm creating a pimp out. Yeah, I tried to get Pete. He said he's...
Of course, back in my days as a security guard, things were occasionally exciting, especially when you're wandering around the lower levels of the parking garage and a weasel with racing stripes decides to come across your path. So that tended to change my patrol route. He left me alone, I left him alone, or her. And then there was the one that I wrote up in our logbook. I said, well, this particular bit of vermin had a Weymouth board sticker. But, yeah, we had all kinds of wildlife come through our area of responsibility. One fall, we even had a pheasant show up.
So you know what we should probably talk about? I got it. So what distros?
Well, a lot of us are partial to Mindy Goodness. In fact, one of the gentlemen sometimes seen around here podcasts about it on the Mint podcast.
Yeah, I've been using Mint.
Yes, I like Mint's freedom from snaps. And I've used Linux Lite. I think I used Sparky for a time. And Ubuntu, of course.
Chorus became Viva Zuse.
Back in the dawn of time, I used, I think it was a Red Hat, maybe tried some Slackware, stuff I got out of books. I was running a 386 SX40.
Wow, that's back.
Well, the SX386 was a SNAM. Now, an SX40 was a racing, and I had full 16 megabytes of memory.
Oh, wow. I built an AMD 133. I think I had 30, because I started with 8 and a couple of them turned into 133. I was flying. And of course, I used this tower, and I was living at home. Well, I bought this Ohio called No Would Sell You. I bought a case, not thinking, because I knew I needed more bays. So I ordered the largest case they had. And when it got the, I was at school at the, this is college. I called back my mom. Did you order a child's coffin? Because that's what looks like at our door right
now. Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I think that had like 10 or 12 bays. I mean, it was tall. It was taller than my, and I only used like two of them. So what made everybody two? Hated Windows and went right into Linux around 95, but I still supported for most of my.
Well, yeah, it was much later for me. I mean, I think it was 8, 10, somewhere in there where I finally made the last switch over. But it was because that was what the, I think it was the Windows 8 era, not the 8.1, but 8. And I just got annoyed with Windows, and I was in college at the time, and I was planning on, you know, working in technology and switched over to Linux so that I could learn it easier.
Well, I was quite happy with Windows 7, and Microsoft was not happy that I wanted to choose my operating system, among other things. So when they started doing all of their, see, we're going to switch you to Windows 10 type shenanigans, I said, well, I've got some fairly decent hardware, rather lightweight, but I will move, you know, I don't like what I'm hearing about Windows 10, and I don't like to be strong-armed, but I had gotten my Ethernet network up basically at the time, so I decided that I would finally jump to Linux, and that's what happened, and that's when I went from Windows 7 to Linux.
And I know Kieran was born with a Linux computer.
Incorrect. I was a Windows boy. I was born in 94, so my first operating system that I interacted with was around 1998. My parents had Windows 95, and I was raised on that. And then, Windows 95 and 98, we skipped 2000 and Millennium Edition. We went straight to XP, and then Windows 7. Actually, I had Vista on my first personal laptop. And then I would experiment with things like Ubuntu, Red Hat, and that kind of thing, but never got very far with it. And then when I was in university, my roommate in uni, because I was, you know, in halls, he was studying computer science, and he sort of saw me with my gaming rig, and he was like, hey, you know what you should do is install Linux on this. And he gave me a USB stick with Arch Linux on it, and I then proceeded to brick my computer entirely because I couldn't figure out how to get Grub to work and detect Windows, and I couldn't get it to boot into Arch either. So I then got curious about it, and that was where my life started to go downhill.
Well, actually, I thought your life started going downhill when you met us and I made you an admin.
I mean, don't forget, yeah. George, this was around the same time because...
In 1998, I think I was getting Microsoft certified.
Yeah.
Granted, I graduated from high school in 99.
You're just a baby.
I am trained Microsoft. I've got Microsoft training. I never bothered getting certified because I was too lazy. But I have like Microsoft, was it Server 2012 R2 installation and configuration training so that I could take an exam as a sysadmin. And then I was so put off by working as a Microsoft sysadmin. I actually quite enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I quite enjoyed some bits of it. But mostly my job working at the college was talking to, because we were Microsoft's flagship educational establishment for Europe. Like we were their most, sort of most integrated college. And that meant I had to have lots of conversations with Microsoft directly about how we were using their products. And I just remember so many of the conversations would go, I would go to them with a problem such as, you know, we build devices off of SCCM and we want to continue to do that with laptops. We want to continue to build them off of SCCM so they have all of the, you know, college accredited software and stuff on them. And then hand them to Intune, which is their sort of new configuration software. How do I do that? And they just said, you can't. It's not possible. And I'd be like, okay, and then go away for about a day, come back with a PowerShell script that does exactly what I just asked them to tell me to do, and just be like, why did you tell me you can't do this? It's clearly possible. Computer. You could have just told me which bit I needed to uninstall and which bit I needed to install, because you need to pick the SCCM client off because it's authoritative and then install the Intune client. That's all you actually need to do. So just having a bit at the end of your SCCM task sequence that runs that PowerShell script is trivial. Why did you tell me it was impossible? And they're like, oh, well, I guess you could do that. I'm like, what do you mean? It's ridiculous. I hated working with them. They just have no curiosity at all.
Actually, I was also Microsoft trained on Windows 2000 systems. Mass Rehab sent me to a wiki course to turn me into a secretary. I got up to 25 words a minute typing with Mabel Beacon. Buggy Beacon, because somewhere along the line, it wouldn't let you progress because there was a bug in its algorithm somewhere where if you got over 15 words a minute or whatever, it didn't feel like that, at least. In one series of lessons, you might have been able to work around it, but the bug was fairly famous. Also, I, being a curious computer type, I think I crashed Access, and my instructor, who had been carefully taught by Microsoft, said, oh, if you crashed Access, you must have been doing something wrong, which was the, actually, I didn't even get to use Access because I asked Microsoft Word to convert a Word table back to text, and it found that indigestible. I mean, it turned things into a nice table, and once it had done that, you weren't supposed to try to get the data back out of it. And according to her training, anyone who found a bug in Microsoft software, of course, was doing something wrong.
Of course.
As Bill Gates had said at the time. Then, after my training, I went to what we would call an internet cafe that was being run on a budget that was probably a couple of pieces of spaghetti. We forgot something as strong as a shoestring. And we funded our necessities because we were housed by Somerville for free, and we had free internet through them, and we would get together these scrap machines and put them together, and we would sell them for a couple hundred dollars, or for $100 a piece or something, with a copy of Office 2000 and Windows 2000. If you wonder why XP had serious license verification installed, it was because of operations like ours. That copy of that CD of Windows 2000 and Office 2000 magically appeared on every little machine that went out our door. Of course, that's also where I got my P1 that I have saved for using on FreeDOS, because it only has 32 megs of memory and 133 megahertz processor, and Windows 2000 would run on a lot of things, but it wouldn't run on something that tiny. It would run on a 64 meg machine if you had a 300 megahertz processor or something.
Yeah, sort of 2000. I'm also Lotus Notes certified, BlackBerry certified, which just died this year. What else am I? All the garbage. Lotus 4.6.
George, you're just certified.
I'm certifiable.
Yeah.
By the way, who is the gentleman who ran OS 2?
Why, that would be me. In fact, I even have a virtual BIOS 2 right now.
Oh, you haven't looked around at, I forget the name of it, but there actually is a current...
Oh, yeah. No, I have that installed too. The newer version, yeah. It's, you know what though? I mean, back in the day, I loved OS 2, and I worked for the company that had the three initials, we all know. I worked for them for years, and that's why I know. But That's what we used. And then one day they marched in and were like, hey, we're going to move to this new thing called Windows. And we had kind of a Windows integration in OS 2. So we kind of knew what it was. But yeah, when they moved to Windows, it all went.
Yeah, I remember my first Windows machine was Windows 95. It had a remarkable ability to eat it, to try to eat, just randomly chew on the operating system.
I had some massive issues because we used Profs and Lotus Notes and all the other fun things that nobody else used. And OS 2 had a lot of that built in. PCOM and stuff like that was pretty much part of the OS. But now I had to install it as a separate entity so I can make MVS. And it was a Mongolian cluster, you know what?
Well, you know, yeah. Also, IBM was, or a part of IBM, wanted to keep networking as a terminal connection option only. So they had their token ring cards for your PC and your even your PS2 PC, which, you know, just
yep, remember
for IBM, fairly powerful. The only problem is that when the workstation division came out with the RT workstation, they could not use, they had to use the crappy PC token ring cards, which were made to be cheap but not efficient. So they were sort of the Realtek version of the token ring. And the and it was well known as the disk division and other parts of IBM said, excuse me, guys. You guys, by limiting what can be done by interconnecting our machines, are causing us to lose to people who can actually use Ethernet and link their machines together efficiently.
Well, there's massive problems with token ring. The first part was if something's uncapped or there's a dead machine on the network, the whole network, and you would have to go around and you could put terminators on that because the original token ring was BN connected. And so when they started using what looked like LAN checks, it became a little bit better because when we switched over our networks to actual LAN cat or whatever it was, when we switched over most of the network over, it started, yeah, it was better. I mean, I understood it, but in the early days when I worked in upstate, they would send me like things like token rings. There would actually be token go, and it was interesting. I learned networking is network.
You're saying even IBM can't obscure networking?
IBM switched over from token. When they switched over around the, probably, I'm going to say just before they switched from Windows, like our Poughkeepsie and East Fishkill plants, that is if I worked for IBM, but those that started moving into changing to, like normal LAN connection, slowly but surely, but they left all the other cables in place. Cause why would they remove them? So the ceilings I always felt were going to get heavy. Yeah, no, I mean, you're going to think of the years, but yeah.
Now, if you read that Ann and Lynn Wheeler site, during the token ring period or whatever, IBM declared that a properly programmed Ethernet connection would eat a tremendous amount of, I think they were 4430 or whatever processor, and IBM had somebody actually program a TCPI stack, and they got the performance that they obviously expected. The Wheelers produced their own TCPI-P stack, and that stack was used a fraction of the CPU power that the official stack demanded.
I don't know. Yeah, it's. I took it and I found it quite interesting. Most of them, even normal now. What is normal? It's really normal.
Actually, what I found interesting as a young kid, I spent a summer up in Maine. My father worked for Raytheon, and this was around the early 360 era, I would say, because my dad went up to Peekskill when they were working on early solid state devices, and so. As a souvenir from this, Dad had a lot of these little silicon wafers with metallic stripes on them and little black dots, which were the transistors and resistors and whatnot. Because IBM didn't etch its stuff. It built it up by hand and it was soldering discrete, microscopic discrete components instead of etching them into onto the substrate or whatever that people with more traditional ICs were doing. Years later, I picked up a book on early 360 and 370 systems, and lo and behold, I see those same little wafers and whatnot. And I said, gee, my dad was part of that history. Of course, he was part of Raytheon's tube division until tubes mostly went out of fashion. And then he worked up at Lowell at Raytheon Missile Division for Sidewinder and Sparrow.
My dad was a priest, so I was pretty much the only...
Well, my dad didn't like my liking for computers, except when it was time to brag to his buddies or what have you. You don't want to give praise to your kid because that will give them, they might start thinking they're worth something and they'll start being annoying and whatever. But it was one of the things that was interesting was that one of his buddies was on the union side. My dad was lower management, actually quality control. And he said they had to test the missiles on a vibratory machine, see that they would survive being shipped, you know, rattled around the world, shipped to God only knows where. And they said that depending on how much rework the union people wanted the testing, if they didn't want to work the overtime, they would shake the missile components lightly. If they wanted overtime to rework everything, they would shake the missiles until their teeth rattled. Because that was all within spec. But the person running the test, of course, could randomly choose whether the missile was rocked like a baby or like the 1916 San Francisco earthquake. One of the interesting things, because he was always the one who had to answer when somehow something had gotten out of spec and how corrective action and what. He was a perfectionist, and teaching him about how people make mistakes and the probability of mistakes just confirmed his basic belief of the human race is a bunch of screw-ups. But this one particular February, the government got a little upset because there was a cold front had gone through and the atmosphere had gotten in the Raytheon plant had gotten too dry and whatnot and was out of spec for manufacturing the missile. So my dad had to get an answer to this problem, why Raytheon was not keeping its factory within what they consider tolerances. So he contacted a local TV weather personality who pointed him at Logan Airport's National Weather Service office. And the Weather Service said that because of the cold weather and the extremely dry winter condition, it would be impossible for Raytheon to have met the spec for that atmosphere. It was a very rare situation, and if they tried to meet the spec, it would have had to snow inside the plant or something. And they sent this letter that my dad could send on to the government, and they charged him like $425 for the letter. Raytheon had a real problem. They didn't know how to pay for something that was $4.25. If it was $400, they could probably write the check, no problem. $4,000, no problem. But $4, they just did not have an accounting, or nobody knew how to write a check for $4 and whatever. Evidently, Raytheon didn't have petty cash in their government missile division.
Which is odd for that year, it sounds easier.
They could come up with cash. They just didn't come up with small cash.
Well, I mean, so $5, $500. I'm sure they bought like $5.
Also, this was in the bad old days of the typing pool, and I was told This was in the 70s, which is when women's liberation reasonably needed in certain circles, that one of the typing pool managers would pull one of the ladies out of the pool just to sit in front of his desk. My dad did not have a degree, and he was both loyal and effective, which meant that he was used by the company like a rented mule.
Trying to get one of our regulars to come in, distros, and he's using something called Nobera, which I guess is...
Just use Arch. Just use Arch, just use Debian.
I know. These just line of... I use Lubuntu. They're all nephews and nieces.
spent so long just faffing about with different operating systems, different distros, and I always just end up coming back to the root distro that it's based on. It's never quite as good as the root.
Well, I never was able to really settle down with Debian. I'm trying to stay away from pure Ubuntu, but Debian, raw Debian, is just a little... she and I just don't get along.
I love Debian on servers in particular. On older machines, it's fantastic. Where I have a problem with Debian is if you try and install it on a newer computer, you're going to have some fun just getting the Wi-Fi drivers working and stuff like that because of the not shipping non-free software. For those kinds of things, Fedora, if I want a good, you know, nice, pretty graphical user interface, and Arch, if I want to be able to customize it to my liking, basically. At the moment, I tend to use a very simplistic setup of Arch Linux with like DWM to keep it as lightweight as possible, because this machine that I'm currently working on, you probably can hear me tapping away on it, is a 2009 ThinkPad X200. It can't deal with much, but while you were talking, I did manage to get news groups working on NeoMut, so there we go. It turns out Eternal September's documentation is utter trash, as is NeoMut's. They just don't tell you how you're supposed to format these strings. It's very frustrating.
Using Gopher.
Going to get you on Gemini using NewsWaffle.
Oh, yeah. Wait, NewsWaffle on Gemini. I need to install Gemini because I love those screens.
That's a browser called Amphora.
Because I noticed when I was looking at the Gemini, I still have your DO.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on.
It's great.
I'm going to have to release my button because I'm actually using the tab button.
Yeah, the show notes are going to have the Z's removed because I'm using Alt-Z as my push-to-talk.
Yeah, I might turn off push-to-talk. For some, I don't like to use the spacebar because I'm always typing, so I will always unmute. So I try to use tab, but then I realize I use tab a lot.
I don't think they know anything about sysrequest or one of those wild up in the boonies keys either. So you can't even use one of the keys that theoretically would actually work great as a push to talk.
And Kieran, I'm looking at, there's four graphical clients, and I'm trying to stay away from this. The terminal clients, Amphora is the one you said?
Amphora, yep.
Because it says fancy, and I like to see.
Is it fancy?
It's actually Amphora Fancy is the build. That's what I'm looking at. I'm at gemini.circumlunar.space / client.
Amphora, it's fancy in the sense that it supports the entire spec, including TLS certificates. Bombadillo is also quite a nice one. Because Bombadillo can also do Gopher really well.
But I just installed.
Yeah, Bombadillo can do both. You just stick it in there.
So apparently so does Eifer, and they're set on Emacs.
Alpha, because Emacs can do everything except edit text.
I've just invited some more people. I'm trying to.
I love that the, I just love that NeoMut doesn't actually tell you what any of its variables mean. It's really helpful. Like, they make absolutely no effort to explain what a variable means or what it does. It just says, there's a variable called iNews. Cool. What does that do? Doesn't say. By default, it's empty.
Wanted to just check the man. Wait, what?
It's not in the man. That's what I'm looking at.
Well, fudge.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's just like you just need to have...
Have you checked the intro pages?
Yeah, I'm on the reference pages on their website. And they say, you know, it's there. But, here we go. Right, if set, we need to go to a completely different reference guide. Cool. If set specifies the program and argument used to deliver news posted by Neomut. Otherwise, Neomut posts articles using the current connection to news server. Okay.
That actually confused me, so I don't even know what you just said.
I think basically what it's saying is if you want to use an external external account to post news to a Usenet server, you can specify it's set up in there. But by default, what it will do is just use the sort of SMTP server that is currently in use when you switch over. So if I post, it just automatically uses the current SMTP server I've got selected, which is what I wanted to do. So that's fine.
I got a quick question, because basically back in the day, like when I had AT&T dial-up, back, you had free on them Usenet. I mean, it was there. You know, you just added it to your mail client, or you downloaded a third-party Usenet. So you, and then they started blocking it because people used it to put binary.
There's still a lot of that that happens.
Yeah, it still happens. But then it was like, if you wanted one, you could pay for it. And then all of those kind of closed down because, I don't know, FCC raids or whatever. I don't know why they closed down, but they closed.
Yep.
Then, so now I find free ones, which they block binary, which is okay. I'm not looking for the binaries, but it seems like half the groups are gone now. Like, you can't see anything anytime I join one of the free ones. So do you pay? Or are you on a free one? Okay.
I'm on one called Eternal September.
Okay.
And that's fine for me. So everything, you know, what we mentioned today, what was it called? You know, the news group that we were talking about just now, the sysadmin recovery, like that's available on there. You know, it works. I was just literally fiddling. I couldn't get it to work in Neomut, like in something like Thunderbird, this works perfectly. It's just instant. But Neomut, it's like, because their configuration is so poorly documented, and similarly, Eternal September doesn't actually tell you different ways that you might want to, so it says, if you go into Eternal September, you get a username and password, fine. And then it says, if you want to set this up, you put it into, you know, put in this server name, put in this port, blah, blah, blah. Now, what you actually need to do is put a string together that includes your username and password, and you then need to go into Neomut, put that in as the server URL, and you need to say that your authentication mechanism is, quote, users, which they don't mention anywhere in their documentation, which is cool. I love it. It's great. Yeah, so we go to authenticators.
I've thought about joining a Usenet company, but I never really got around to it. I've got too much stuff on YouTube or whatever to consume to go back to scraping.
I don't think it's just going back. I think my first experience online was more or less in AT&T BBS, because to me that was this close to chat. It was like I was using my email client. I could go out. I could find a group I was interested in, subscribe to it, look around at what people are talking about, and then post something in there. And maybe a day or two later, an hour or two later, somebody will send back to me. It was nice. And I mean, I guess Google Groups is the next progression of that. But I kind of miss it because I went off BBSs right to like AT&T WorldNet and dial-up, setting up a done. And that was available to me. And then it was taken away because of the people buying it.
Yeah, I mean, Google Groups is basically just a front end for what used to be Usenet. I mean, it works exactly the same way. I just find it a particularly ugly and poorly designed front end, personally. Like, I want to look at these things as just email. I don't want, because the way that, I don't know what it is about the way Google crushes up responses, but it's really difficult for me to follow threads in Google News. I don't know, in Google Groups. It drives me a bit crazy, so.
Well, I get emails on them all the time, too. So it's like I belong to two or three, like OpenSUSE ones I'm still in and other things. Even though I don't use OpenSUSE anymore, I still respond. But it's in there, And it's weird because now I have to go look at it in my mail. Then I can go bounce over to Google Groups, see what they're talking about. 90% of the crap is spam now. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm going to start leaving.
Like with everything, people ruin it. Anytime people join something, they just ruin it.
I need to manage. Every time I tab, I wasn't thinking about it. It's just now mess. I wish there was a true any key. I mean, I guess I could remap the super key / Windows key to this. I mean, I just have to disable it.
So next thing I'm going to try and do is see if I can add these to the sidebar.
So besides being in here today, what is everybody or all of them? I think I just heard crickets after I answered.
Yeah, I've got no plans. I mean, you know, the whole point is to see, you know, to start the year as you mean to go on. For me, that means being a hermit.
You've been a hermit the 11 years. I mean, you do go out in the world sometimes, but only when people drag.
Only when my girlfriend forces me to. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, oh, we're going to go shopping. It's like, oh, I don't feel like. No, we're going to go shopping. Okay. Well, it is afternoon here now. And by my ruling, not anyone else's real ruling, just my don't turn. I can now crack open.
Hey, yeah, go for it. I've got to say, I'm disappointed with the Star Trek news group not being busier than it is. I would have thought for sure that Star Trek people would be exactly the kind of nerds who would be into news groups. But there we go.
So I feel bad for anyone in the southern Georgia and
so do I.
Here in Jack's firework day. And it's pouring out right now. Good luck with that.
Last time fireworks.
I can't. PTSD.
I don't know what your financial situation is, but I can definitely recommend something like an HP Elite Desk 1 liter. They're the little systems that mount behind your monitor. They will provide plenty of horsepower for a relatively modest price. I just picked one up, and I'm just itching to get in and configure it.
Yeah, I have a couple of the small little heavy metal-like things. They're nice. I'm using just... I posted a screenshot earlier, and it actually has my... If you look way up top, me logging the machine I'm on, the name of the machine I'm on, because it's a fake NUC. I call it FC, so it's got my username /...
Yeah,
is
well,
anyone else here with a Mastodon? I'm kind of cleaning floor and talking, doing stuff. So I keep running over here.
Now, I'll admit that I have a weak spot in my heart for low-powered systems. I have a P4. I have a couple of... I have a Celeron XP laptop that I'm hoarding, and I even have a 486 laptop that I'm hoarding. But yeah, it's for some stuff you do need a little horsepower, even running Linux. Oh, and when listing the dogs, I didn't include my Sempron 1250 single core 64-bit half on. One. I have this M2 SATA SSD that I really hope works in my new machine, because again, when I looked around, it mentioned the M2 slot, but it took a lot of digging to find out the M2 slot is both SATA and NVMe compatible. Rather, it is reported to be both Saturn and compatible. Since I haven't tested it, I will have to withhold judgment.
I have this feeling of shot across my room while I'm... It'd be worse than hearing... I am, Mike. I just a little lobby. We're not gonna.
Ow.
Apparently.
Oh, and started again.
Oh, awesome. Maybe we ran. Ken, did we run out of space?
Did George break it again?
It's literally always my fault. Always blame me. I mean, even if I'm not even in the room, didn't have anywhere near it, it's always my fault. Remember?
Absolutely.
All right. I guess I'm supposed to send Honky a rocket, but... Well, this is going to be interesting. I send Honky a message that recording may have stopped, and I don't know if he's around to respond or what.
Well, it said it stopped recording and then started again.
Looks like it's...
Does it? It says it's recording on my end.
Oh, yeah, no, it says my bad.
So yeah, it started pretty much immediately after it stopped, like 3 seconds later.
I think Ken's in the middle of a party, so he probably saw it on his phone, went, oh, dang, he started recording it again. You know, hopefully it won't happen again, because I'm sorry, Ken, I know him, because I...
Yeah, I mean, I would.
I know you would, but you never... Every time I say, come to Og Camp, you say, I'll be there, and then you never show.
Yeah, so, your point being?
Nothing, besides, but I'll listen.
Well, my friend, I received some time ago a small, laptop, and it's got a nice i5 in it and everything. And if I was a better person, I would donate it, but I'm not that better person.
I'm going to have to retire to go and get some food, so I may be back on later.
Well, our door is always open.
All right. See you all in a bit.
Bye-bye, Spliff. Some cleaning upstairs, but I'll still stay in here, but I'll be AFM AFK.
There's an interesting project I just ran across. It's called the Old Usenet Project. Evidently, someone has a website where they carefully will send you post-dated Usenet postings that are like 25 years old, so that you can follow along with the old discussion.
Hello, Netminer.
Happy New Year from Thailand.
Happy New Year from Thailand.
Hello. Finally, something worth waiting for. I must say that the saying Happy New Year has run aground on the fact that we haven't had a decent Zulu clock, so instead of continuing to screw it up, I'm skipping a lot of...
Like absolutely everyone in the area had bought their own fireworks and were setting them off. There are fireworks everywhere. El's brother was setting off fireworks about 15 meters away from us. It was a very loud experience.
Yeah, around the 4th of July, fireworks are going off all over the neighborhoods around here, even though Massachusetts is a no-fireworks state. And one of the guys who showed up here for the podcast has PTSD, so he and fireworks don't get along.
I understand.
Well, with no live persons here, I may have to crash out after a bit. If there were customers, I would hang on. Everybody's gone about their business and...
So, I missed some of the conversation earlier. What was the reason why FTP with TLS was preferred over SSH?
Generally, because if you drop a certificate into the FTP server, you're pretty much done, because you have the TLS encoding. I don't And that's about the only security that I'm looking for.
Okay.
It basically turns FTP into something. It's just like shifting HTTP into HTTPS. Heck, it's actually the same sort of system that's being used here on Mumble.
It probably will nap soon, but I'm going to stay in here. I've just been cleaning all morning, and now I'm like freaking tired, and of course I walk late.
Yeah, I may take a nap, and I'm probably skipping a lot of stuff, but right now I'm just getting burnt out.
Nah, I got you, man, and I feel you on the fireworks, man. I have PTSD too, and fireworks drive me nuts. And thunder, and we have the worst thunderstorms probably in the South down here. I'm getting better. I've worked on it, and I've done that weird freaking flashing light touch there. I don't know.
Well, my PTSD is from a verbal assault, not from anything military or whatnot.
Oh, neither is mine, but it's apparently I'm triggered by I don't know what. But, like, I used to love fireworks and thunderstorms, and now it's just like every time, like, a loud noise or something, it just, it's nothing to do with that. No, it's more like, it has to deal with my wife, like how I found. We won't go into that. That's kind of, oh, man. But I am feeling the tired, though. I am feeling the tired. And it's rainy here today, too, and I really feel like going for a walk and maybe taking you guys with me. Of course, we're not in a video type client where you can see me. This morning I took you for a walk when I was kind of like walking to my coffee.
Well, I don't want to say too much, but I say, damn it, man, my heart goes out to you.
It's what it is. Go ahead.
But I will say that because of my situation and a lot of stuff, such a partner is not in the cards for me. So I'm glad to hear that you had what you had. I'm sorry it's your loss. That's all.
No, you're good. Don't worry. That's probably why I can't like keep a relationship longer than a couple of months. Because I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting my wife out of them or something. And I just so I've just kind of given up. I just hang out with my cat, work on computers most of the day. That's pretty much what I do. I retired myself last year, December, actually on my birthday. So I retired myself, and I also took my I had 5 weeks vacation, but I had 3 weeks coming to me. So I took the rest of December off as my vacation, and then I retired right after that, unbeknownst to my company. I mean, they knew it was coming. I contacted HR, but I didn't really let too many people know, because when I left, it was just kind of like, as soon as I left, I got phone calls just like asking me like if I could consult or do stuff. So I just like, nope, I'm done. But I kind of left because of the pandemic. I know that sounds bad, but I was pretty much the only, I was covering people that didn't get vaccinated and they let them go. And I was the only one vaccinated out of some departments. So I was just like, and I was working from home. So who cares if they're vaccinated or not? They were working from home too. So that I was like, you know what? I can't cover everyone's job. I'm out.
Yeah, they were. And of course, they wouldn't pay you anymore for doing everybody's job.
Well, the problem is I'm salary, right? So they would pay me a little extra. It wasn't like a crazy amount, but because I was salary, but they would be like, hey, look, and it's not like they would ask. I'd just get stuck in these loops. But most of the time they'd be like, look, we're going to need you to try to work to 7 or 8 o'clock tonight. And it's middle of pandemic. So they knew that I could probably do it. And they took advantage of me being widowed too, because they knew there was no family nearby. And they would just be like, hey, work the holidays, do this for us, do whatever, because other people have families. So I was like, I'm not working for this company. And this is like about 5-6 years in. I was like, okay, I'm done. I can't do this anymore for you guys.
That's the way my dad was. He would cut his vacation short. He would do everything. I mean, toward the end, his alcoholism, he was taking time off because of his alcoholism. But when he was healthy, he was a company man to the last digit. And of course, people who didn't know half as much as he did, but had degrees in botany or something, were his bosses and took full advantage. And there were people who wouldn't sign off on reports he had to send to the government. And this is paper, because there was no email at the time, or no, at least the company didn't use it. They would hang on to stuff or require changes just to show their power. It was annoying, and I wasn't working for the... Anyway, take your nap, and I'll hang in here listening for incoming traffic, and if I need to crash, I will.
You know what? You're good. You can crash. We can both crash. I'm probably... When I say nap, I mean just lay down, watch a movie, and probably not nap at all. Besides, I have a cat staring at me right now, so I think she wants her third breakfast thing. Well, no, actually, it's lunch, so first lunch.
Yeah, well, I may just hang here waiting, like you, taking downtime, but not necessarily crashing out, just ready to respond if somebody shows.
Gotcha, yeah. No, well, I'll be kind of listening, but if it sounds like it's something I can jump in. Of course, I'm the worst techie in the world nowadays. I'm so far beyond the times in technology.
Well, you know, the Lugcast group here is pretty easygoing, and seriously, it's more about having a bunch of good friends getting together than the techie stuff. So,
yeah, that's kind of why I like tech and coffee. We've been doing that for so many years. It's just like a bunch of us just talk every day.
I'm just saying, you're very welcome to come to our party whenever.
Hey, man, I'm going to mute for a bit, and maybe in an hour or two I'll come in. I'll stay. I keep my entity in here, though, and I might just go for a walk and take you guys with me. I might join as another entity with the same name, Geospart. And that's actually, everybody asks, well, nobody asked this time, but like what Geospart means. And so I bought pretty much everything that says Geospart on the internets, and then I will go and grab it when new things are available. So I usually try to grab that nick no matter where. I even own the domains, well, at least two of them. But it's the first three letters of my initials along with my old tag. I used to go as Spartacus back in the 90s. I just GeoSpart. Because, you know, Spartacus, everybody else owned that domain, so there's no way I could buy it.
Well, take care. Enjoy your downtime.
Okay, I'm going to mute everything, and I'll return somewhat shortly.
Good night, Netminer.
Good night, Netminer.
Yes, take care of yourself, friends. Please do.
We will. Thank you.
Hello?
Hello.
Sorry, I've just been recharging. I've been minding the store for a while.
This is my first time joining a chat room.
Well, a lot of people are leaving their identity here and will be stepping up. So, what are your interests? My name is Netminer, and I'm glad you decided to join us.
Happy to first time in the chat room. Stash it. I actually came given to me while I involved General.
So, what did you do in the Air Force?
That is actually a short story. I was...
Well, I don't want to press for anything that might be private or classified, but just that I had an uncle that served in World War II, and up until his retirement, he was in Air Force and full-time Air Guard plane mechanic.
Well, can't get off the ground without their mechanic. That contribute from my side of the house.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I visited him up in Maine when he was serving at Vanguard Brewster International. He took me up flying with him and on a fire patrol out of Old Town. Also, one day he had to check in on one of the Ready Birds, the F-101 Voodoos. They were on alert at the end of the runway in a shelter. And I was in one of the Air Force pickups in the middle seat. And they radioed the tower for clearance to get down to the shelter. And we were behind a taxiing Voodoo pretty loud. And the we asked the tower to say again, and he said, "Follow that noisy thing." So I've been one of the relatively few people who has tailgated a jet airplane, a jet fighter. This was at the end of Vietnam, and some of the reconnaissance Voodoos were coming through to have their lower time parts swapped out for the higher time parts of the Air Guard bird.
Okay.
I never served in the Air Force or Army. A lot of physical flaws and never was in shape for it. My brother served in a Hawk unit and with a Pershing unit over in Germany. during his time at the Pershing Unit, something happened that proved the Cold War wasn't quite as cold as people think, nor as peaceable.
That's definitely an area of history that I do enjoy reading, especially the technology.
Well, he did have a little excitement. Like one time they had a drill where they were supposed to signal to destroy the Pershings on their launcher. But somebody forgot to put in the extra signal that said that this is just a drill on when they made whatever horn or whatever they were hitting. So somebody had to go over to a pack of C4 and pull out the fuse and throw it up in the and throw it away. I'm told that the fuse went off just as it reached the peak of it of the throat. Things could have gotten.
Yeah, I've always wondered why they can't just use out of the moon, have to deal.
Well, if they're dealing with a improvised device, oftentimes they might have an anti-tamper secondary fuse.
Okay, well that's fair.
And that's why they would treat the whole device as a complete dangerous unit. Although recently on YouTube I saw somebody clearing a road of anti-tank mines that had been laid on it. The narrator explained that it takes 1,000 pounds of force to trigger these particular mines. So a guy walking up to them and gently sweeping them out of the way with his foot was not in danger. They weren't as sensitive as anti-personnel mines.
Still, those
guy was, well, I guess compared to the other stuff, this guy was facing mines that he couldn't set off by jumping on one. We're trying to low risk. One of the interesting photos I saw was the backseater in a Voodoo. He must have lost his pencil or something because he was head down and butt up. And I do mean butt up. How he ever got into that particular position in that tight a space, I'll never know. Those air guard guys must have been really flexible. Yeah, I'm sure. They were aging by then, but they were still on pad alert, a pair of birds at the end of the runway in a shelter. Also, the hangars still were originally designed for probably C-97s, the tanker version of the B-29. The doors had doors in them so that they could keep the tails of the C-97s, I think they're C-97, the prop tankers sticking outside while the rest of the plane was serviced in the hangar. Yeah, well, I've seen video of the C-97. Yeah, huge, huge planes, and they were, when refueling jets, the jet would be just about stall and the C-97 would be at, you know, balls to the wall while they were doing their fueling. So that's why the KC-135, that was the Boeing 707's precursor, was invented or was ordered, because they needed jet tankers to keep up with jet speed. I hope asking about your service didn't bring up any unpleasant memories.
No, I've come to land. I am very happy where the turns my life.
Well, I know. Well, I hope you accept that your service and the side effects are respected here, at least by me.
Would like to have, and by group protest.
What? When my brother was in Germany, at the end of his tour, he had an incident where, well, I'm not going to say, but as I said, the Cold War wasn't as cold as people think. And my brother was just a mechanic most of the time.
A particular aircraft, a lot of very uninvolved.
Well, a lot of the regulations, at least for Vietnam, and I would say that they probably haven't changed, were far more advantageous to the enemy than our flyers.
Especially with the flyers' job.
I know that one. Also, making our ground guys safe is not necessarily a popular part of with certain parts of the Air Force.
Anyway, netminer.
Well, I'm I'm on disability at the moment, which I lost my job in 97. And after a few years of assistance hunting for work from my mother, it would be hypercritical so that, because she was really scared that if I got a job, I could move out and she'd lose her caregiver. I ended up going to Mass Rehab, and they found out that I had clinical depression, Asperger's syndrome, with a side order of domestic PTSD. So if I hadn't been disabled when my mother went into a nursing home, I would have been on the street. Now I've got a very modest disability pension and the house. Anyway, I do clinics. I do some writing for my own entertainment. I do podcasting down here at the Linux Lugcast group a couple of times a month. Since I've been into computers since I was young, which is in the 60s, I'm sort of the reference for a lot of this stuff. I had an account on a machine on the internet back when it was still mostly government control. Yeah, we usually have been saying Happy New Year at the right time, but we've had a bit of a problem this year because we haven't had anybody around who's got a Zulu clock.
I have a Raspberry Pi here on my Raspberry, not only a chronometer, daylight and night of chattering.
If I'm reading the notes right, greeting to India, Sri Lanka, New Delhi, Mumbai, Kolkata, and Bangalore. Next we'll be going to Pakistan. Between you and me, this is about as close as I want to
do. Pakistan?
Yeah, it's not exactly a friendly country for Western.
Friendly to
one of my uncles worked for Comsat, and because of the world situation that was developing in the 70s and 80s, whatever, the government was developing satellites that would take a data load from a friendly ground station, probably in the U.S. You'd send it up to this satellite, and the satellite, when it got close to the target satellite, would relay the information. These relay satellites were replacing ground stations because ground stations were often in politically questionable areas.
The long reach of satellites.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. My uncle worked out of Goddard Space Flight Center, Maryland, and I'm told that he did a lot of the unmanned launches, the manned launches being done out of Houston. I need to step away for a moment, and I'll be right back. I hope I haven't kept you too long. Things were pretty quiet, so I decided to take a break.
This is my first time in. I did a couple of episodes. I have a couple more on my laptop, a problem to edit. I'm fairly busy today right now.
Well, yeah, life happens. And I'm sure HPR is going to be very happy when you can drop off your episode.
Yeah, I've got a couple episodes compiling new firmware, and I've got another one replacing the ignitions. But like I said, it's really a problem with getting two young kids like that.
Are you a single father, sir?
I am not. I do have a wife.
But things can get busy anyway. I understand.
With them being as young as they are, it's very difficult. Both of as we have to the tag team.
May I say, from personal experience, it is quite heartwarming to hear a couple who's raising kids who are working as a couple. My family history, my dad was an alcoholic and my mother was very codependent. It was a very toxic situation. Well, you have an independent woman from Maine where family structures tend to be matrilineal, that is to say the wife handles the household and the husband handles, you know, either the farm or whatever, making whatever income is required. My dad came from the mountains of West Virginia, which is very patriarchal. His dad was king of his castle, and when he said jump, everybody said how high on the way up. And when he got married, dad said, oh, good, I'm going to have my own kingdom. My mother didn't exactly volunteer for that, among other things. And my brother and I were in the middle.
Again, I couldn't fathom that, but I do.
Well, I've survived. Now I just have to break some of the bad habits of the survival years and start living.
Yeah, that's definitely something I want to pass along. How to work together, how to...
Well, also, with everything looked at as power center, teaching kids survival skills was not considered useful.
Hello.
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 We have a stash.
There is an echo. There is not an echo. I'm just saying everyone's saying hello. Sorry, I should not. It's like shouting fire in a crowded theater. Who's got an echo? Oh, God. Where's my microphone?
Hey, Moss.
Hi, Joe. Well, I managed to wake up finally. It's really gloomy outside, which is weird because it's in the 50s. My wife wants to go out to eat in a little bit, but I figured I'd get in while I could, and then I'll be back in later, I hope.
Just got back from Sam's Club. It was a mistake to go to Sam's Club.
I can imagine.
I need to avoid that.
Yeah, well, we got a free membership there. My wife's parents got her brother a membership and added us onto it. We'll be able to get gas from there, and I think... I couldn't hear you. What'd you say?
Said that's how they get you.
Yeah, we'll be able to get gas from there, and I think we're going to... If we get anything else from there, it's all going to be ordering it from online.
Yeah. Stash, may I know where you live in general?
I am currently residing in the state of entrapment.
Beautiful. Aren't we all?
Well... I'm up in Massachusetts, so I wonder which of the liberal entrapment states you're in.
The land of, we lovingly call it land of entrapment, New Mexico.
Where in New Mexico?
Southern.
Las Cruces?
Alamogordo.
Southern Park?
Alamogordo.
Alamogordo, okay. No, because I used to live in El Paso.
And I didn't.
Yeah, my...
I'm sure you're glad to be away from El Paso right now.
Yeah.
My brother had some fun times in El Paso in a green suit, and even more fun up in New Mexico in white sand.
Yeah, I used to hang out there quite a bit, too.
Well, I've been...
Play shoot down the drone.
I haven't been to southern New Mexico, but I've been across most of the rest of it. Fortunately, I haven't lived there.
Spent quite a bit of time in Las Cruces. I had friends there. Sunland Park, because, well, yeah...
My brother is now a long-haul trucker. Whenever I think of him, I think of the Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere, because he bounces from Washington State to Florida, stays out of Northeast, but
yeah.
He was raised, but about everywhere else.
My friend and co-host Dale is a long-haul trucker, and then on Mintcast... Bill is a medium-haul trucker. He gets home every weekend.
Yeah, my brother's been a long-haul trucker, and it hasn't been good for his married life. However, he's now married, and his wife seems to be adjusting to living in the truck pretty well.
Well, Dale is not married or in a relationship or anything like that, but
got kids.
Yeah. Well, we basically record Distro Hopper's Digest when he plans to get off the road. Yeah, what week are you going to be home? Our next one actually is going to be Tuesday. We tend to do 10 or 11 episodes a year. I think it's been 10 every year so far. We missed December altogether. We had one at the end of November, and now we're doing it beginning of January. The concept was monthly, but... We understood. It was me and Tony Hughes that started it, and we're a couple of old guys. So we said, let's not stick to a schedule, just do the job.
Well, that seems to be the good survival strategy for a lot of podcasts.
And when Dale came on, we pretty much had to do it because, he wasn't going to record on the road. And Dale has been a big help to our podcast. Our numbers went up 35% when he joined us. We're a niche of a niche of a niche podcast. We now are up to 5 whole episodes that have had over 1,000 downloads on archive out of 38.
Well, at a time, I was distro hopping quite a bit, but now I pretty much settled down to Mint.
Yeah, I pretty much have settled down, but I dual boot to Mint and Bodhi. I'm a supporter of Bodhi. But, you know, there's still something to look at, and there's always new distros coming out. I think this month I'm going to be reviewing StormD OS. Storm OS is an Arch distro. StormD OS, they took the same concept and applied it to Debian.
Now, that sounds interesting.
It's easy to use. I'm liking it okay. I'm not going to change to it anytime soon.
Have you heard of Titanic?
No.
Well, the ship?
There's actually a Titanic, I think it's Titanic distro. I'd have to look through my list of channels on YouTube. I ran across it.
I think we reviewed Titan OS, but I don't know about Titanic.
Maybe that's the one.
I think Dale did that last month.
I'm slightly dyslexic, so sometimes when I reach into my memory, I pick up the wrong. I have off by one error.
Got to get that parity flag checked.
Oh, for decades, my memory was strictly a write-only device.
That's the way my mouth used to be. If it forms in my brain, it's out my mouth before it hits a filter.
Well, I'm also have Asperger's syndrome, and subtlety is something we retrofit.
I thought they phased Aspie out of the jargon, but I am also autistic.
Yeah, Asperger's is no longer a thing.
Well, the thing is, it got taken out of DSM-5, but DSM-5 itself is a joke. So a lot of people that just got used to calling themselves Aspies decided to hang on to it.
Yep.
It's no longer useful to the shrinks. Now, it may be useful to the patient.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing, DSM-5, Dr. Francis, who managed DSM-3R and DSM-4, has come out and said DSM-5 is a joke. The idea on DSM-4, he said outright, we do not have data to support some of these diagnoses, but we hope to, over the next decade, come up with that data. And when DSM-5 came out, he said, there's no new data. Why are you guys just making up new diagnoses?
Royalties?
They literally were paying doctors to come up with a new diagnosis for DSM-5.
Well, I threw away something like 15 years with a certain expert psychologist. She was someone who really didn't need patient input for her treatment.
I fired my psychiatrist back in 03. I haven't taken a psych drug since then. They had me diagnosed on so many things and taking so many. I call it the medication guinea pig dance. They have to be able to sell drugs to call themselves real doctors, so they do.
Well, I've had some life situation problems, and when my MD shrink said, well, I really can't help you with that. I can just help you with the pills. I said, all right.
Yeah.
And he also has, we did a few telemedicine sessions over the phone, but after Mass General decided that COVID was okay, he no longer needed the he wanted face-to-face, which is, you know, I have to spend 5 hours going in for a half-hour visit that is actually, how you doing? You're still alive? Good. Bye.
Yeah. Having any suicidal thoughts? Do you feel like you've just detached from your body anytime recently? I know how that goes. The problem is that their medical diagnosis is based on keywords. They literally have a checklist. If he says this, this, and this, he gets this diagnosis and we give him that drug. If that doesn't work, well, here's these three drugs that are similar to it that we can try.
Also,
I can shut up about this anytime. This is a personal soapbox.
Actually, I've got a story from Mass General. I had a very stubborn thyroid. I had it reduced in 87 and removed in 97. I said, gee, while I'm in Mass General, they have a psych department. Maybe I can arrange for some treatment. And I wake up from my operation, and here's this lady who wants to give me a personality evaluation and says, are you planning on harming yourself or this or that or the other thing? No, I said, I'm here. And I thought that I could possibly try to find out what kind of resources might be available to someone with at least clinical depression. I didn't know at the time that I was Asperger's and whatnot.
Yeah.
And here I am on who knows what drugs coming out of surgery, and she wanted to evaluate my personality.
Yeah.
With paperwork. I said, I don't think so. This is a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live here.
Yeah. Well, I self-diagnosed at age 12, and I'm not age 12 anymore, let me tell you. And the doctor said, oh, no, you're too smart to be autistic, which proved they didn't know what they were talking about. But
yeah, well, the thing that I discovered is that in the hospital, there's East shrink and West shrink, and they don't really communicate.
Huh.
There's the in-house shrinks, and there's the outpatient shrinks.
Huh.
And the outpatient shrinks don't talk to the in-house shrinks because there's the shrinks for those people who need hospitalization, and then there's the shrinks that for those who need tests. I just thought it was a mono, you know, I didn't realize there was East and West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend who's the lead psychiatric RN at the mental wing of a hospital in Denver. I'm sorry, in Asheville. I'm really confused today. Anyhow, she is in Asheville, and she's been a close friend, and in fact, she's the priestess that married my wife and I. So, and she has met with me on a number of occasions, just hung out with me for quite a while, and she's quite clear that I do not need the drugs anymore. So it's nice to have verification from someone who knows, but it's really hard to go it on your own when everyone's trying to tell you, well, you need to see this doctor and listen to that doctor.
Well, I'm taking a handful of pills that I trust about as far as I could throw that bridge near my house. And I've come to believe that a lot of the power of these pills is it's supposed to work. But if I get off my medications completely, there, I'm on disability, there might be some questions raised.
Well, I was afraid they were going to do something to me when I took myself off, but they seemed to ignore me. I went in for an appointment and I said, well, I'm not taking the drugs anymore. And they said, well, you'll relapse soon. You'll come back to us and beg us for the drugs. They literally said that to me. And I said, well, don't you want to know what I'm doing? Oh, we're not supposed to talk about those things. And so I said, okay, bye. Haven't seen one since. I've seen a couple psychologists, but they don't try and push drugs on me.
Well, the one shrink living in a castle-type house or mansion on top of a hill in Brookline had me go over once a month, including in the wintertime, and I don't drive, climbing the top of this stupid hill. Hmm. And he was falling asleep during our sessions. But if I didn't show up monthly, I didn't get my pills, so therefore, you know.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I've been off all the pills since November of 03. I am taking a blood pressure pill right now, and I'm getting an injection because my body has stopped manufacturing its own testosterone, but that's all the medication I'm taking. I am doing a lot of supplements, but that's my choice.
What was your numbers for the testosterone?
It gets down to almost zero. I've had a 12, I've had a 25, and so they...
Now, is that free test or overall test? Or?
I do not know. I just go in, they do the test, they say, oh my God, they say... now, when I'm... they wanted me to do 1 milliliter every other week. Actually, they wanted it every week at first, and my hematocrit kept going out of whack. I was doing half a milliliter for a while. I think they boosted me to 1 milliliter anyhow, but I'm only going in every 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, it's actually supposed to be better to do shorter times between shots, even if it's smaller amounts. So you're not, you know, going up and down and up and down and up and down, but so you're more level.
Apparently, I hold on to the levels when I'm getting it. It's when I've gone without for like 2 or 3 months it starts dropping again.
Okay.
You know, I can hang on to what they stick in me. I just don't create any new.
Oh, so, start lifting weights. Now that you're saucy.
Yeah, I've tried to get people to look at my testosterone, but...
Well, my testosterone's low, but I can't convince my doctor to start giving me the shot.
Yeah, well, I can't convince them to even do a decent test from my experience.
Yeah, well, you can... There are places you can send off to have them do it. And, I don't know, just a proper endocrinologist would be nice.
Yeah. Well, I had a problem because I had a testicle that never dropped. And when I got to college, it appeared that my body created a sack of water just to have something down there. And when they removed that, because it gave me symptoms like hernia, they said, wait a minute, there's no testicle down here, and they had to dig way up almost to the bottom of my lung to find it. So I've been a little short, and then I've been developing other cysts, and the last time they removed those cysts, they completely shocked the testicle, and it just never, the one I have never produced again. It's still there, it's still whole, it just isn't doing its job. Okay, we can stop talking about that now, too.
That doesn't bother me. I find the conversation interesting. I mean, I've been getting my testosterone checked every 6 months for the last few years, and it recently just got back up over 300. Now, it was around 230 for a while, which is low. Anything below 300 is considered low. 300 is considered the low end of normal, like 700 is what it should really be at, but
yeah. Well, I was always low, very low end of normal, but that's okay. I never needed to go beat people up anyhow.
Well, it's not just about, you know, beating people up. It's about, you know, having energy, having focus.
Well, the thing is, as low as mine is, they say my bones start losing density.
Yeah.
And they already have lost density in my jaw. That's why I don't have teeth anymore.
Exactly.
The doctor could have put implants in, and he said there's not enough bone density to sink them in.
Yeah. But, it also helps you heal quicker, which is one of the reasons that I would like to get on testosterone, because my tendons are just like falling apart here instead of actually healing in a timely manner.
Maybe you should stop lifting.
Right, so I fall apart even quicker because my shoulders screwed up, my hands screwed up, my ankles screwed up. I got to keep all the muscles built up around those things or I fall apart a lot faster. Like my hip. If I don't work basically legs and glutes and lower back, then my hip just keeps getting worse. So I get to work out till I'm dead. It'll probably be working out that kills me. Huh?
Have you tried kinesthesiology?
Kinesthesiology tape.
Yes, it's basically workout tape. I use it on my knees after I go for runs, and it's got elasticity. So you put it on, and then it contracts a little to help tendon.
I think I've seen people use that on their shoulders and stuff. I'll have to give it a look. And I've had to be careful with my knees lately because my knees have felt a little wobbly, but, you know, I like heavyweight squats, rising.
Yeah, I tend to go for long distance runs and get back. My knees are very, very wobbly. Some tape on my knees and within a minute I feel like I'm back to my old self again.
Well, I had an auto accident a couple of years ago, as Joe knows, And I have not come back. It's just, it took 80% of my strength out of me. I can't even walk 40 steps before my butt muscles start aching.
Well, hopefully, with the treatments, I don't know how long you've been on them, but hopefully that starts clearing up.
No, no, I've been on the testosterone for years now.
Oh, okay, and it's not helping?
No.
So I'm going to run your numbers up. Tell them you don't only need testosterone, you also need HGH.
Well, I don't think that's something I can get.
Human growth hormone? Sure you can.
Without paying a whopping amount for it.
Oh, insurance will cover it. As long as you can get your endocrinologist to sign off on it.
Don't have an endocrinologist. Well, I can't even say it right now. I actually have an FNP, and I've got a... nephrologist, because, you know, my kidneys, you and nobody else in the room knows that my kidneys are damaged. The doctors did that to me. Another reason I don't really listen to doctors that much. I saw a blue light on Mobile Magoo.
But didn't hear anything.
Is no voice. Sporeth is typing.
It's Morse code.
Gotta go find some food.
Yeah, we're gonna go out. A restaurant we haven't tried before. We had the idea it was out of our price range, and we're finding out it's not, and people really like it. So, and then on our way back, we pick up some pieces so we don't have to go out tomorrow.
But the question is, what is for?
Well, whatever we like, that's on the menu. This place has salmon tacos. I've had fish tacos before, and I've had some really, really good ones, but I never saw it in salmon.
A little upscale for my taste.
Well, it was upscale for my taste. We're finding out it's not as upscale as we thought it was, like I said. But my mother died almost 2 years ago now, and her bequest to us is being paid out in monthly installments over 5 years, so we've got a little more to do things with than we did. We are trying to set things up to reduce our overall expenses, so when it goes away, we won't be dead.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.